And welcome everybody to the Bangers and Classics podcast. It's actually number 50 in a limited run of several thousand, and it's and I just wonder what you'd been doing to celebrate 50 podcasts, you know.
Yeah, well, it's a number 50 in a limited run of 50. Anyway, yes, what have I been doing? Well, I've been trying to attract some guests, and obviously strictly A-list guests, James.
Oh yeah.
And the first one I tried to attract was Clint Eastwood.
Mm.
Contacted Clint,
yep.
Said, come on the podcast. It's the 50th at podcast. We'd love to have you. And he said, sorry, man, I'm rearranging my sock drawer that day.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Right. Okay, well, it didn't get any better.
Yeah, no.
Flash Gordon, remember him?
Yes, I do.
He's on remand.
Oh, no.
Can't come. No. Arthur C. Clarke. Well, I thought, let's have a scientific bend to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get Arthur C. Clarke in. And, well, I found out they didn't actually exist, ever.
Oh, right.
If you remember his mysterious world, he investigated all sorts of stuff and didn't exist. Well, the goodies investigated him and found that he didn't exist. And finally, I contacted the British rap star, 25p.
Oh, yes.
Unfortunately, he's a spent force.
Is he? Oh, dear.
Yeah, mate. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, yes, that was it. That's what I was trying to do. And that's how I'm trying to celebrate the 50th podcast episode. By trying to get people who have just told us basically to get on their bike or otherwise been unavailable.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'd be very surprised if anybody's gone all the way through from number one to number 50, because I think there's a massive drop-off rate when people are just very disappointed by the whole thing.
We struggled to make it to number 50, let's face it.
Absolutely.
So what else can I say? I actually saw a car this week.
Oh, good.
Sort of classic car, It was a passing glimpse, James. It was really a passing glimpse. It was a yellow Fiat Coupe, and I could not tell you what model, whether it was 16-valve turbo, 20-valve turbo, 20-valve normally aspirated, but it was there, and it was being used, and there, it was mighty fine to see one, albeit very briefly.
Yeah.
That was it. Sole car spot of the week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, so no, I can do better than that, obviously.
Oh, you always can.
Well, I saw a Bentley Turbo of a similar vintage to your one from the previous week, which was fun. And again, it was fantastically dirty, and which is always reassuring that this chap's been turboing about in his Bentley, which is rather excellent news. Also, a Volvo 960 estate thing, which was on a C plate, and again, it was in a builder's yard. It's being used, quite incredible, really, to see these old things that are still driving around. I was in my lorry as well, and then it was a flurry. Although I don't think it is a flurry of Land Rovers. I don't think that's the group noun, but. There was one in, it was an Army 110 in camouflage, and I saw that more than once, and a couple of 80s. So there was lots of waving going on. So, we were all getting very excited. I said 80s, I meant 90s. And the bloke in the camouflage one, he had a more magnificent beard than mine. I think because he was greyer, so basically it was like staring in a mirror. But he was in camouflage.
Stop! He had a more magnificent beard than you. I don't believe this. No,
it's very hard to believe, but I think because his was particularly grey, so it was a full Father Christmas rather than mine, which sort of isn't really. It's partly Father Christmas and partly other things, and partly small rodents that live in there. But apart from that, no. So I just saw just so many. It was funny because I've only really been out properly once this week, and I just saw all those cars in one fell swoop. But there was a lot of Land Rovers. There was an awful lot of them. So that was all good fun. So it's all going on down here.
It certainly must be.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, going back to this business of beards, etc. I don't think your beard's genuine.
Oh, but that, well, maybe
no,
not.
No, see, I've seen the photos.
Yeah.
There's a sort of young Brideshead revisited era, James Ruppert.
Yeah.
With the sports jacket and the cravat, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I reckon that's how you still look. You just disguise yourself to go to the shops.
Oh, okay. That could be a thing. I don't know.
I think it probably is. why not? I mean, it's not impossible, is it?
No, not really.
No. Well, anyway. Shall we kick on with the podcast? What are we doing this week, James? I mean, we're going to do something different this week, aren't we?
Are we? All right. I wasn't sure.
Well, neither was I. I just thought we might just for a change.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to talk about news this week, are we?
No, I don't think so. There is no news, David. It's all recycled. It's all what was on the previous day. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that's right.
This is more important than news. Whatever we do.
Oh. Yes. Well, some might say that. Some might say that. Mm. I thought what we'd do is you'd choose 25 bangers.
Yeah.
And I choose 25 classics, and we'd do them in batches and possibly explain why there are choices.
Yeah.
You can start, but what I'll say is for my selection, I've tried to keep them down in price. I've not chosen anything vastly expensive.
Mm.
There'd be a couple in there. I've also tried to choose things that I can fit into.
Yeah.
So things like a Lotus Esprit.
Mm.
Sorry, yeah, don't make the cut.
Mm.
Wonderful car.
Yeah.
But I can't drive you, so you're no blooming use to me.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, you being of more conventional stature than I am.
I'm racing driver size, David. You know, that means I could drive anything. I think I could drive anything rather badly. I'd be a terrible racing driver, but at least I'd be able to fit in.
Well, this is true. I did actually try to. There was a racing car simulator at the National Museum of Scotland. Oh goodness, about 15, 16 years ago now, and it was based in the real racing car cockpit, and I couldn't fit in it.
No,
but here's the joke: I still set the fastest time of the day on it.
Yeah,
I had the most unconventional posture you've ever seen.
Yeah,
but I thought, piece of cake, and it was. Yeah. Much to my then fiance's chagrin, she was about a minute slower than me. I think that's when things started to go downhill in our relationship.
Oh, really?
Possibly, yes. There may have been other reasons too, but we'll not go into those.
No.
Anyway, your selection of bangers, let's have your first few, Mr. R.
Well, what I did, I wrote all these down at once, and I've not changed them. So I did these very late at night. I wrote all of them down, and I thought, well, what I'm not going to do is change any of them. So there you go. So I haven't revised them. These were all what came out of my head on the spur of the moment. And obviously it could change from day to day, but this, I just thought, well, if I do it in one fell swoop, I can regret them later. I'll start with a Morris Oxford, which might be very curious. It's probably one of my earlier memories of cars. It's a car my dad had. It was a car that was very popular with banger racers, actually. All of those Pininfarina group of cars. There was Cambridge and the Wolseys and Rileys and stuff, which did sort of go on and on and on. Rust would claim them in the end, but they were sort of immensely strong and boring cars. And in many ways, that was a 1950s/1960s banger. It was a very typical car that people ran into the ground, and I don't mind them at all. You don't see very many of them about anymore. But for me, that's one of the classic 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s even, banger car that you just bought because it would work, and it was very basic and a big B-series engine, didn't it? Other than that, I'll rattle through these. 2CV. Which you have to look at, you know, really sort of basic stuff. And that did it extremely well. And, you know, all those farmers in France going over fields with eggs in the back, what would they have done it in if they didn't have a 2CV? A 2CV is a very easy choice, really. It's a proper cockroach car in that, you can leave it for a bit and it will start. And if anything goes wrong, it's relatively easy to sort it out. There's not a lot to go wrong on them. With that in mind, Golf Mark IIs, if you want to have a bit of fun. I had a few of these and they were extremely reliable. It was just, you know, it was just the car that just went on and on and on and on there was no problem with it whatsoever. So a Golf Mark II from, can't remember the year, was it 82 to some other time, 92. It was about a 10-year span, wasn't it? Those were very good. And whilst I was thinking of Volkswagens, I didn't think Beetle, strange enough. I actually thought Polo, which is another car that I bought in various guises and always found them to be extremely good. Obviously, you can buy a bad one, but... make sure you get a four-cylinder one, not one of those three-cylinder ones. 1.4 engine, and they seem to go on forever, and they last very long. And you can always sell them. Everybody wants one when it comes to sell. So they're pretty good from that point of view. And finally, representing the great continent of America, I'll just go for a Buick Century. The reason I chose that is it's one of the cars that I hired when I've been in America from time to time, and it just sort of represents a sort of vehicle which again goes on forever. You know, they've got, you know, big unstressed engines. They're not always pretty to look at. There's lots of plastic about and stuff, but it just represents what is a sort of a car that's easy to look after and will sort of trundle on and on and on. Cars have got more complicated since, but that, you know, from the 80s and 90s is probably one of the most reliable old bangers that you could get, really. But I could have mentioned lots of other Chevrolets and Fords and all sorts of things, but I'll just go for the Buick Century. So that's my first five there, David.
What have I got? I put mine into groups. I'm going to start off with the hot hatch group.
Mm.
And the leader of the hot hatch group, because it's my favourite one of the lot, it's Renault 19 16 valve phase one. It's obviously a hatch. It's a Sports Blue. I had one, loved it. Would have another one like a shot. Brilliant cars. Possibly the best car I've ever owned as an all-rounder. Just did everything really well. If I'm honest about it, it wasn't completely reliable, but hey, nothing in life is.
No.
Next one is a 205 GTI. Now, back in the day, I would have went for this one, and I probably still would. That's 115 bhp 1.6 version, so it's a later 1.6. I would want it in Miami Blue and the sunroof, but if you want to have any 205 GTI, that's fine by me.
Mm.
And then moving on to a sort of second cousin of it, Citroen BX GTI 16 valve. It's got to be black, though. It was driven by Gandini in the classic advert, so he drives one to work. If it's good enough for him,
yeah,
it's good enough for me. The other one I'm going to go for is, it's a link with Italy, is a Lancia Delta HF Turbo IE. It's a two-wheel drive version. Integrale is too expensive for this list, and the two-wheel drive suit me fine anyway. Sharp to look at, sharp to drive, and I feel that I've got a Gandini design in here, so I've got to have a Giugiaro one as well.
Yeah.
It stands in its own merits no matter what. So to have one of those, and the final one, might be a bit of a surprise to some people, is an RS1600i, the Escort RS1600i. Mm. To me, it's an interesting and attractive alternative to an XR3i. Good-looking car, good to drive, not without flaws, but as I said before, what is? So that's my first five. And on that note, I think we'll take a very convenient break. This is the 50th episode of the Bangers and Classics podcast with the following special guests.
You did send out the invitations. Oh, you didn't.
Sorry, folks. Looks like it's just James and David again. So that's us back after the break, and we're going to resume with James telling us his next five bangers. Over to you.
Right. Well, I thought actually I'd start with a van. I know a van isn't a car, but it's pretty close. The Ford Transit, I think, is... It was actually fairly car-like to drive, wasn't it? So, from people of our generation, David, we spent a lot of time in transits, moving things about, moving houses, doing business and all sorts, and they were pretty good vehicles. Certainly the early ones, I mean, they're sort of complicated old things now, but I would say, yeah, again, transits everywhere, absolutely everywhere now. When was the last time you saw an early series one or two transit? You just don't at all. And it's always fun to see the ones with the bigger engine at the front. So it had a snout at the front, but I haven't researched this. So I like those transit. And actually another commercial vehicle, sort of, Toyota Land Cruiser. They are just fairly phenomenal vehicles. They seem to hold their value extremely well. There's a lot around me in the middle of nowhere, and they are used by farmers. Farmers don't use Range Rovers and Defenders. Well, actually, they do. There is actually a Series 3 that still earns its living on a local farm towing stuff, which is good. But yeah, if they want to do several hundred thousand miles without replacing anything, and that's quite genuine. There's one near to me which is it's over 500,000 miles, and all the all the major components are still the same. So Land Cruiser, yeah, that's a sort of a banger legend if you want a 4x4. Rover 600, I know the Rover 600 isn't necessarily a Rover, it's rather Honda. But again, I've had experience of a few of those over the years, and they sort of run forever, mainly because they're Hondas. But quite like them. Other than that, yeah, talking about that big miles, what will take it is a legend from our youth, which would be a Mercedes 190. They were extremely good vehicles, really. Didn't really have the character of a 3 Series, but it was sort of meant to be something a tiny bit different. So, but it was a very classy little saloon. You don't see very many around like you used to, but the ones that have survived, still sort of motor on, but very relaxing car to drive. Ideally go for the automatic, and you'll have lots of fun. Mazda 323 is my final one. Again, I've just known so many that have gone on forever. The early ones had the pop-up headlamps, which was always a win as far as we're concerned. But again, most Mazda products, and who knows, maybe I might mention an MX-5 at some point, David, just to annoy you. These Mazdas, whether it's the 323 or you go for a 626, you know, they are again proper Far Eastern cars that pretty much go on forever. They will last. You know, it's a good representative of the cockroach car. It's not, in many ways, it's not very interesting, although the 323 did look like a four-door coupe, which was good. And as we said, the pop-up headlamps. So that's my next five. I'm itching to know what your next five is, David.
Well, I'm going sports coupes, and there's six of them here. I don't want to chuck one out.
No.
So I'm going to start off with an Alfa Romeo 916 GTV, 3-litre V6 version. You can get a 3.2 if you must. I would go with 3-litre and also go with a Phase 1 or a Cup, for the simple reason there's more headroom in those in the later versions. I had a Phase 2, unfortunately. Headroom was rather restricted, so I had to sell it. But if you're looking for a coupe with a great engine that drives well and looks pretty stylish, 916 GTV is a fantastic car to own.
Yeah.
Next one up is something we've talked about recently. It's a Honda CRX. I'm going to go for one from 87 to 91, so it's a Phase 2 hatchback version. Doesn't matter if it's a VTEC or not. If it's a 1.6 or the 1.6 VTEC, doesn't really matter. They're both great, very stylish little cars, very nippy, very able. Get one. Next up is, going back to Italy, is the Monte Carlo, Lancia Monte Carlo Spider, going for a Series 2. Series 2, I think we'll go for Series 2 with Series 1 wheels. So I didn't really like the Series 2 wheels as much. But main difference between the two, obviously, is that the Series 1, as everybody knows, had some braking problems. Front wheels were prone to lock-up. And Lancia cured this by taking 2 years to disconnect the brake servo. That essentially was the cure. There were other things done too, but that was the main one. Anyway, they're great cars, very stylish. And they've got a gorgeous roof that folds into the B-pillar. Very clever design and just a lovely way to get about. They're not for driving fast. None of these cars are. If you want to drive fast, go to a racetrack. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
That's what I genuinely believe. But they're just a nice car, a nice place to be and enjoy yourself. Just enjoy the feeling of being alive. In a similar vein, I'm going to go for another mid-engine car. It's a Matra, I'll give it its proper name for once. It's a Talbot Matra Murena S. Now, they made the Matra Murena in various flavours. There was a 1.6, a 2.2. Later on, there was a kit for the 2.2 called the 142, which they then put into production as a production car called the S. I've had all of the cars except the 2.2 of the 142 kit. I had a couple of S's back in the day. Fantastic cars to drive, very long-legged, very easy to get on with. A couple of little glitches with them. The brake calipers were prone to seizing because of dissimilar metal corrosion. But apart from that, great. And very comfortable. You've got the 3 seats, decent sized boot, very stylish. Took me into France a few times. And of course, I don't live anywhere near Channel Ports. So it has to be reliable to get them back. And mine was about, 17 years old when I took it, 18 years old. And did the journey no problem at all. So get one. That's what I would say. Next up, I'm going to go to Germany. This is, James is going to be surprised. He's choosing a German car. And I'm going to go for the Scirocco Storm Mark 1. Again, Mark 1 Scirocco, lovely looking car, very nice car, based on the Golf Mark 1 platform, but preceded the Golf into production, I believe, James.
Yeah.
I'm right in that. Rust has killed most of them, sadly. But if you can find a one that's been well looked after, or one that's been well restored, then it's a no-brainer. They're a nice car. They're very good to look at. They're good to drive. There's just nothing I can say bad about them, except maybe there's not much space in the rear. Mm. But the coupe, so what do you expect, really?
Yeah.
And I'll move on to the only full convertible I think I'm going to talk about here.
Yeah.
And that is, of course, you know what's coming, don't you? Can you guess, James?
No, I can't. I can't, Dave. Sorry.
So Lotus Elan M100.
All right.
All I'm going to say is MX5, MX Schmive. Get one of these things. Brilliant. I had, again, like the Mirena, I had all the flavours of them over the years. Mm. The normally aspirated, the SE Turbo and the S2 Turbo. My preference would be for an S2, even though it's slower than an SE. But they're just wonderful cars to drive. They stick to the road like glue. You feel alive driving them. Again, I didn't drive them quickly, but you know they were very sound, very solid cars. Felt very safe to drive. It's a great feeling driving along knowing it's a Lotus, and that's just something that's it's a bit special. Anyway, that's my bunch for the sports coupes. So what have you got for us, Mr. Ruppert? I wonder what you're going to throw at us next. There's a couple of curveballs already.
Well, there you go. I don't know. Daihatsu Kuore. I quite like all Daihatsus, which, as people know, are basically, certainly in the old days, they were alternative versions of Toyotas. They were sort of Toyota's micro brand in a way. But I quite like them. I've first, again, seen them do remarkable mileages and just keep on working when other cars have given up. Good luck finding some parts for them these days. But yeah, again, it's another sort of cockroach tiny car, which I like. Volvo 240 in a state version, probably, which was all antique dealers in the 1970s had them. And the ones that I've known of, again, they just went on forever, really. You just filled them up with petrol and they went. And that's the way sort of cars, certain cars anyway, used to be. Again, was sort of a tiny bit dreary. But VW Passat, I'll probably go for a 2000, pre-2000 one. But, you know, the Passat was something you could always rely on. And you see so many of them that have done sort of absolutely remarkable mileages, really. They just go on and on and on. I've known a lot of photographers have had them, so they can chuck all their stuff in the boot and then it just works and works and works. So yeah, I like a Passat. Gonna upset you, David. I do apologize. Mazda X5. But it's a fact, David. I'm sure you can find some obscure reason why, but you know, it's a no contact engine, so even if you're even if you haven't bothered to change the belt, it will be fine. And again, I've just known so many people who've had them, and yeah, providing you haven't got those really early ones that came from abroad and rust, you should be okay. But yes, they do rust. But if you want something that works, that you can leave in your garage, a friend of mine sort of buys one every sort of 5 years, but yeah, uses it sparingly, but it always starts and always works. So yeah, I go for the MX-5. I suppose it is prodding a stick in the direction of Mr. Malloy, but he doesn't mind.
Oh, I do.
And then, yeah, we go back to the taxi rank, which takes us to a Mercedes W123. So, yeah, if at any point you've ever travelled by taxi in North Africa or certainly in Europe in the 80s, you always got into the back of a W123, you know, in Holland, in Germany. And again, it's because they work. Okay, they were a terrible beige colour, hearing aid beige, it used to be called. But it's an absolutely marvellous, basic vehicle, which will just do its stuff and go on and on and on. So that's my slightly boring five there.
Right.
Apart from the Mazda, of course.
Which is incredibly boring. yeah, but you said, James, you know, there's the kind of cars you can just keep in the garage.
Yeah.
That's where they should be kept and left there.
Is that right?
Off the road, yeah. Please. You also mentioned Daihatsu.
Mm.
And sort of similar, sort of, well, we're going off at a tangent here.
Yeah.
But you know the wall snob?
No, yes, I've heard of him.
Yes. He used to think sugar diabetes was a Welsh flyweight.
All right.
Apparently so. Anyway, that one's went down like a lead balloon as usual.
Yeah.
Moving swiftly on into some small cars now, and my first pick.
Mm.
And the reason it's the first pick is because I think it's the greatest small car ever made. in many ways, it may be the greatest car ever made, is a Citroën 2 CV. For reasons James advocated, it got people mobile. It was very simple, it was very cheap, it was very rugged, it was ideally suited to, you know, the climate of the time and the economic climate of the time. And you bear in mind, it was brought out in France just after World War II. There wasn't a lot of money around. There wasn't a great deal of mobility in the countryside. And that really improved people's fortunes and lives a great deal. So it's for that reason alone, apart from the fact that it's fantastically versatile, I mean, what other car can you, you know, get an 8-foot baguette into if you want? I mean, it's going over the top about an 8-foot baguette, of course, because 7 foot is big enough. But also, if you want a bit more practicality, even in that, buy a Dayane, which is going to hatch. The second car is also French, and that's the Renault 5. Now, I don't mind if it's a Super 5 or the original 5. They're just great cars. It edges out, and very slightly, because it's a close one thing, the Fiat 127. They're obviously of a similar era. They're great little cars, very stylish, great town cars, but you can, they're practical enough and able enough to use, you know, in long distances. You know, for a small number of people, you can't fit an entire family and luggage for 2 weeks into one. Well, maybe the French could, I don't know, but these days it would be hard to. But yeah, they're great little cars. An Italian car now is the Fiat Punto, the first generation Fiat Punto. And the reason that it makes the list is because A, it's a good looking little car, and B, having once hired a 1.2 litre version, I found it a buzz to drive. It was just very peppy. Maybe not a car for long journeys. It was a little bit too headstrong, a little bit too rorty for that. But it was a wonderful car to drive on short and medium distance journeys. And then James has mentioned the VW Polo. Well, I'm kind of with him here to a degree, but I'm not, because I'm going to go for the Audi 50, which was the Polo Mark 1's. Obviously, it's his sibling. It was, again, like the Scirocco and the Mark 1 Golf, the Audi 50 hit the market first. And I think it's just a little bit more stylish than the Polo. It's also rarer. But a good-looking little car, very practical, very able. Yep, chuck that into the mix. And then finally for this segment, I'm going to go for a car that's not terribly small, but by more than a standard, it wasn't terribly small by the standards of its day. It would be now. It's a Citroën GS. Came out in 1970. Hydropneumatic suspension, the steering system, magic carpet ride, the shape. Everything about that car was wonderful, except possibly the engines, which weren't really powerful enough. You start off, I think, with a 1,015cc air-cooled engine was the smallest, I think, you got. Never got above, I think, in any model, except for the bi-rotor, was 1,301cc. But it doesn't really matter too much. Again, they're not rocket ships, not for driving quickly. They're just simply very comfortable, very effective. The shape of them was so far ahead of its time. If you look at what British Leyland was producing in that era, look at a Citroën GS, you can see why, unfortunately, our car industry failed, and the French one didn't. Yeah. Anyway, we'll take another quick break.
You're listening to the 50th episode of the Bangers and Classics podcast, presented by James Ruppert and David Malloy.
You were joining us after the break, and I've just spent several minutes remonstrating with James about the MX-5, and James is going to tell us about five more bangers, and Lord knows what he's going to throw at me this time.
Well, I don't know. I've noticed, I've sort of mentioned another one again, but Saab 9000. I know everyone goes for the 900 and stuff, but had a brace of those, and they were fabulous, actually. Saab 9000, very, very comfortable. You do big mileages in them, and the most comfortable seats in the world. And I think Mr. Malloy would probably fit inside one as well, which is, I don't know, I presume that's that would be an added bonus. So tons of room. How can you fit in a Saab 9000?
We had a 9.5 and a 9.3, and they were both blooming disastrous. I want to like Saabs, but in the strength of those two examples, which were disastrous, I can't. Sorry, Saab owners, I really don't want to like them. Anyway, James, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, no, had a few of those, 2 litres, 2.3 and turbos and stuff, and they were great. They were great family cars. You get a ton in them. You could really get an awful lot in the back of them. It was as sort of as big as an estate, really, once you folded the seats and all that stuff. And ignition pack used to go, and I used to sort of have a pile of those in the garage, and you just replace them. It was very easy to do, and they started again. That was the only thing that went wrong with them. Apart from that, let's go to a boring one, but a Honda Civic. Again, I've had the most number of readers I've ever spoken to about cars that they've owned that have never let them down. The Honda Civic sort of tops that list. Just so many people have said, yeah, I had a Honda Civic, and I sort of had to get rid of it. I was so bored by it by the end because I've done a million, I've done a million miles in it, you know. So yeah, Honda Civic, old school, you know, from the 90s to early 2000s, absolutely remarkably reliable car. Yeah, I seem to have gone for another Volvo Estate, but actually, again, did have one of these, Volvo V70. Those were very good. I bought one unseen, and it was great. And we ran it up to almost 200,000 miles, and then I gave it away to my nephew, and he ran it for, I don't know, another 50,000 miles or something. So it was just a phenomenally, again, reliable car that went extremely well. I would go for, I've actually got a classic in here, David, you might approve of, Fiat 500. It's a car that you still saw around being used on a daily basis, certainly in the last few years when I've been to Italy. But again, if you were around Italy, you know, even in the 80s and 90s when the Fiat 500 was long gone, it was still a staple, very much like the 2CV. And you can pick that one. Again, I've been looking at prices recently. And if you go to Italy, you'll get a decent one for about £5,000. And yeah, that'd be fun driving it back. So I think we should all go and do that. And finally, yeah, a weird one. The RT London bus. Obviously, I should go for a Route Master. Everybody knows the Route Master. But the RT bus was on the majority of routes. And that was something that just ran and ran and ran. I mean, these buses were designed to do a job, and they never really fell apart or actually, because of the materials used, whether it was the seat materials, there was lots of chrome on the seats, it was extremely solid. And certainly compared to Rackley buses, not that I go on buses very much, but when I do, it's not a very pleasant experience, whereas the old stuff was really solid. Yeah, you could go right, you could sit right at the front of an RT bus and see what the driver was doing, if you managed to bag that seat. And yeah, you could ride on top. There was two levels to it, and you could hop on and hop off. There were no pesky doors in the way. So yeah, an RT bus. So that's my weird one for this section. Any weird ones in yours, David?
Maybe a surprising one in the next section. It's only four cars in this bit. I've sort of stretched the definition of medium car a little bit. I'm going to start off with an absolute copper bottom classic. It's the NSU Arrow 80.
Mm.
Now, everybody's got to like that, except if you owned one back in the day and lost a fortune on it. And if you did, sorry. You know, these were launched, was it 67, 68? Mm. Absolutely would everybody that saw them. Very futuristic cars. Motor engine, of course, made by Co Motor. And that was a downfall. Everything about them was great, except the engine. And it was the wear and the rotor tip seals that was a downfall. That was a major problem. It was eventually sorted to a very large degree, but by then the damage was done. Obviously, you can buy one now, pretty much safe in the knowledge it's going to be a heck of a lot more reliable than it was back in the day. But even if you bought one and stuck it on a turntable in your living room, you can look at it every day and admire the genius that went into this design. That would be enough for most people, I think. Secondly, I'm going to move on to another German car. Now, this is a bit of a departure for me, German cars, but it's from the 80s. We talked about this one recently. This is the Audi 80 from about 1986. And the reason it's in here is simply this. It's a very good-looking car, very well built, and it was very what I call hyper-competent. It just did everything pretty well. It didn't do anything really badly. Audi seems to me, as I said before, to have lost the way. Yeah. But this is when they found it. This was possibly their zenith. And moving on now to the surprise choice. It's a Montego Countryman.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. A friend had one. Clarky, the late Clarky, had one. And though one of my other mates, Mike, and I used to regularly slag him off about it, it actually was a very comfortable, very versatile car, good load capacity, looked a lot better in the state form than the saloon did, I have to say, as well. It did pretty much what it said in the tin. It got from A to B with all sorts of things you get in the back of this car. It was incredibly versatile back in the day. It wasn't too expensive. There's not too many of them about. There's quite a lot to like about them, and of course, they're British made. So I would have one of those. The final one for this segment is a car designed in Britain, engineered in France, and then assembled in Britain, at least many of them were, is the Chrysler Alpine. And yes, I know, rattly tappets, but the original engine in these cars, the Croisi engine, was designed by the same guy who designed the Matra V12 racing engine. So it's got heritage there. It looked good for its date. Drove one a lot of times. My dad had one. My uncle had one. I even had one for a little while, many, many years ago. Yes, they rust like fury. Yes, the engine rattles. But they're nice, comfortable cars. That concludes the medium car list. That leaves one to do for each of us, I think. And I've got a surprise coming. And I don't know about you, Mr. Ruffett. What have you got?
Well, no surprises with me, I'm afraid.
Well, you've done enough already.
Well, I sort of have to do a Land Rover Series 3 because of, not just because I have one, but actually it doesn't cause me a great deal of grief. It does sort of go on working, and as I mentioned earlier, there's one still doing a hard day's work on a farm. It passes my house, I don't know, 2-3 times a day with the trailer and all sorts, and I can hear it coming, and I always enjoy seeing it drive by. So yeah, I know the prices of them aren't going down, but again, you can get all the bits for them. And I mean, I would regard it as a sort of a cockroach 4x4x4, but it is a proper one. It is a fixable one. Again, I had a conversation the other day with a man who was on the giant side. He was built a bit like Mr. Malloy, and he had a Series 2A, and he actually cut the bulkhead out so he could sit comfortably in it. Because I did say, how on earth did you fit into it? So yeah, he had to modify it. But there you go. Yeah, if you had one of these, you probably modify its fit, but that's great. Yeah, we seem to be doing cars that I might have owned. E38 BMW 7 Series. Again, it was known as Shed 7. If you read Auto Car, it was in there for quite a few years. That was another car very difficult to kill, but it did immense amount of miles in the most supreme of comfort. And it's, again, the last of the fixable BMWs, which will go along with my next entry. In that, yeah, there was not a lot to go wrong. I mean, certainly with what was a luxury car, you would think, yeah, it's going to be a nightmare. But actually, it was extremely good. And E39 BMW, again, 5 Series. If you like driving, you'll have a whale of a time in an E39. They are extremely well-built cars, and it's the last of a generation. You know, we will not see their like again. We only see very complicated cars that, you know, make your head hurt when it comes time to fix them. But if you have a diesel or if you have a petrol, all the engines are great. So we go to that. And then we go to the Corblimey. We go to Toyota Corolla. Again, this is based on, you know, real life, where you know people have Corollas and they just go on and on and on. So we're talking about the 80s and 90s stuff, not the modern Corolla. And it sort of did go away for a bit, and I suppose the Avensis was the replacement for it. But actually a genuine 80s, 90s Corolla. Apart from the rust, they would just go on for absolutely ever. They are absolutely impossible to kill. It's just hundreds of thousands of miles. So again, it's based on real stats. And in a way, my number one banger we're going to come to now is a Mini. We're talking about a proper Mini. If you were around in the 70s and 80s and you didn't have much money, you bought a Mini for 10 pence and you could make it work. It would work when it really shouldn't have worked. It was relatively easy to fix. It's quite cramped under that bonnet, but you sort of knew what would go wrong with it. Obviously, rust again. But it was a car that was on every street corner, and it was used by everyone for a very good reason, in that they were very cheap to run, and they usually started first time. And if they didn't start, you could usually push start them. So, yeah, my sort of controversial sort of best banger of all time in many ways is the Mini, because I just think you could keep that going, and it's sort of one of the legends that we have. So that's what I will finish on, and so I'm extremely excited to find out what David has got.
Right, well, Minis. I can't guess what.
Really?
No use for me.
There's a surprise.
Yeah, it was the first car I ever tried to drive was a Mini. It was a private road I hastened to add for anyone thinks otherwise. I was about 15 at the time. I was about 6'2". And no, it didn't really work out. My knees were somewhere around about my ears. Couldn't get comfortable. And I only drove it about 100 yards. And that was enough. I never, ever tried to drive one again after that. Because it just, no point, couldn't get comfortable. But there we go. These are cars I can
get comfortable in. So the first one is the Renault 25 V6 Turbo. And it's, again, it's got to be a phase one and it's got to be black. You can have a phase one with a phase two engine. Renault had a habit back in the day of producing cars, a little like the 19, like the 25. The phase one models looked better than the later ones, but later models often had a better engine. The 11 Turbo is a cracking example. 11 Turbo phase one had 105 bhp engine, but it was a little bit laggy. The phase two had another 10 horsepower and really wasn't lagging at all. I know I had those cars. They nearly made the list. I quite fancy a Renault 25 V6 Turbo, so I can be a yuppie like the people in the ads, and my wife can say to me, aren't you being a bit hasty, David, or something like that. The second one, I'm going to go for a car built by Matra. Now, people are going to think, he's gone for the Rancho. Well, no, I had a Rancho, and that's why it's not on the list. it wasn't the best ownership experience, which is a bit unfair to the car because it was quite a venerable car back at the time. But I'm going to go instead for an Espace, a Phase 1 Espace, which apparently was originally designed by, or the original drawings were done by a chap called Fergus Pollock in the UK, and they made their way across to Matra. And I believe long 20s for Lanis, who designed for Matra, did some work on it, then was offered to Peugeot, who Matra had a commercial relationship with. Peugeot said, no merci, and the project went to Renault, and the rest is history. Phase one is, of course, the most wedgy, blocky one of the lot, but for that reason, I like it the best. It's the original, therefore it's the best. Next car on the list is the Smart Roadster Coupe. Mm. You're going to say, James, surely you can't fit in one of those things.
No, you can't fit in one of those, David.
Exactly, but I can, I have. Yes, I would go for the Brabus model because it's all of 101 horsepower. And if you're a big chap, you know, you could do with a few extra horsepower to get you around in one, let's be honest. A very stylish little car, very practical. Roof folds, again, it's really a nice system. Not without their issues in terms of reliability. There's a couple of things do go wrong with them. But if you drive one, they're hooked to drive. Not so great in wet roads. Like most rear-wheel drive cars, they're not. But on the right road, fantastic car to drive. And the soundtrack's really good too. It's like having half a 911 in the back. We move on to the penultimate suggestion. Mm. It's the only four-wheel drive car on the list. And it's not a British four-wheel drive car. It's not even a European one or a Japanese. Mm. It's American.
Goodness.
And it sure as heck ain't a Jeep, let me tell you. It's the AMC Eagle station wagon from the late 70s. Permanent four-wheel drive, looks very American, four-wood trim, good ground clearance. This is the sort of car you could, you know, head up to Montana in for the weekend. There are some here, and there are a few imported. There was one for sale recently for about $5,000, which is pretty good value, I have to say, for what you get. Again, lots of space. It may be a product of its time, but it's also got a timeless feel to it, which leaves one car, and this is perhaps a surprising one. Hmm. And we talked recently about a car that was in a film, and it had a licorice dispenser in it in the film.
Hmm.
Do you know what car I'm talking about, James?
Yes, I do.
Well, the original car from that film sold at auction in America for £52,400. I'm not sure if that includes buyer's tax or whatever.
Yeah,
that was the one from the film. That was Andy Sherritt sent the tweet to us asking which one of us had bought it. Sadly, it was neither one. But it's an AMC Pacer. And if you're going to have one, get a left-hand drive. The right-hand drive dash conversion looks pretty bad. But it's a quirky car. It's an unusual car. It's not economical. There are lots of reasons not to have one, but it's got character in abundance. And that's why I'd have one. Because it's a car that put a smile on my face every time I saw it. And in this world, anything that can do that has got to, by definition, be a good thing. And you can pick them up for a heck of a lot less than £52,000. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on the list. And that, sports fans, is it.
Is that it? Are we done?
Well, are we?
the definitive list of
bangers
and clowns. I think it might well be.
I think it is.
So.
No, this list is purely, as lawyers would say, it's demonstrative but not taxative.
Yeah. Okay.
That's from conveyancing law from a long time ago. I still remember that phrase. Anyway, I'm talking nonsense as usual. But no, it's not a definitive list. It's 25 cars that I happen to like. There were lots of other cars I'd love to put on the list that are just too expensive. Alfa Romeo SZ for one. You know, DeLorean DMC 12. There's another one. There's all sorts of cars that I haven't mentioned, but I suspect yours are rather more a definitive list than mine.
Well, I don't know about that, David.
So how many have you bought of those? How many are you going to go out and buy now?
Well, I don't know, really. I have to look at cars now because as I'm shuffling towards the end of my life, David, I have to make sure that there's enough space for all the other rubbish that I'm trying to throw away. So
hang on. That's the world's tiniest violin playing in the background. No. Nonsense, man. At least another 60 years left.
You think so? But, I'm fighting hard against the fact that they're trying to ban cars, David. That's what I'm trying to do.
Mm. Yeah. They're trying to ban us as well.
There is actually a petition I think you can sign. I think it's one of those government ones to end the Bangers and Classics podcast as a waste of airtime, apparently.
They didn't ask us to sign it, but we can't write it anyway, so...
No.
There's a couple of X's on it, you'll know we've signed it too. I think that's it. Next week we're going to have somebody else on the podcast.
Oh, well, that'd be nice.
Yes, going to challenge you. Mm. I've told him about the challenges, but I ain't telling you till later in the week to give him a chance.
Yeah, okay.
Because obviously he's going up against the king. This is a world title fight level.
Is it?
I don't even get to be the judge or juror.
All right.
I think we'll put this one out to the Twitterati. Anyone that follows on Twitter can decide who wins. But in the meantime, as ever, thank you very much for listening. Hope you join us next week.
Yeah, thanks for turning up, everybody, for 50 of them. We might inflict another 50 on you if you're not careful.
Yes, I mean, 50 not out, that's more than England batsmen have got lately, it has to be said.
Absolutely. Yes. Cheerio, everybody. We'll see you at the 50th party we're holding. I don't know if we told you where it was, but all the drinks are on David.
Yeah, they didn't even tell me where it was, James.
Well, there you go.
There you go. That's why you asked me for my debit card number the other day.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Okay. Cheers.
Okay, bye-bye.